From the campus of Maharshi University of Management, this is World Radio KHOE 90.5 FM, and you're listening to the program What's New on Campus. And today we want to welcome an old friend and gifted writer, Linda Agnes, who is adjunct faculty here at MUM, and her gifted writer colleague, Dr. Kamuda Reddy, MD, who joins us on Skype from India. Welcome, Linda and Kamuda.
Thank you, Stan.
Thank you, Stan.
So both of you, Linda and Kamuda, have written articles and books, but this one is very special, isn't it? It's the retelling of the Ramayana, Ramayana, a new retelling of Valmiki's ancient epic, complete and comprehensive, by Linda Agnes and Kamuda Reddy, put out by the Tartric Cornerstone Editions. And we're so happy to have you talking about this because it's such a, no matter what, when we talk about the Ramayana, it seems to be relevant to the times, doesn't it? Now this new book is a wonderful telling of a very ancient story of huge proportions in so many ways. And the time and place of the original story is set thousands of years ago at a time when India was many times larger than at present, and it wasn't even called India at the time. It was called Bharat. And maybe, Kamuda, would you like to tell us a little bit about the story of Bharat?
Yeah, actually, I think in Rama's time, all that there was the Vedic tradition and, you know, the Vedic culture all over the world, you know. I don't know when the continent separated and then when all these were formed. And Ramayana is an evergreen epic because it is a mirror of all our lives, our communities, and the complexities of our past, present, and future. And so Ramayana really deals with life in an evergreen way, and it really represents old times. It represents old times. It's not, you know, just ancient or present. It will be there for the future, because it brings up so many human values, so much about human behavior and about the dharma or the righteousness or the natural laws of life. And so it is an evergreen epic. It doesn't matter, you know, when it was written. Yes, it was written a very long time ago. Bharat was very big. And then, you know, but still, this is like, it is like a lamp. It is like, you know, a lamp which is really shining brightly. And like the sun, it is diffusing everywhere. And everywhere it goes, it brings in those values. It, you know, it reminds people that this is how life should be. And this is how the family should be. And this is how the country should be. And this is Ramaraj. And in reality, you know, Ramayana reminds that Ram Raj is not somewhere. It's not in some land. Ram Raj is really in your heart. Ram Raj is really in your heart. And Ramayana is not a book. Ramayana is Ram itself. Ramayana is the transcendental eternal self, which we call the Paramatma, the Ram himself.
You know, I think that was very beautiful what Kamuda just said, to bring out the universal value of the Ramayana and to remind us that it's really an eternal story that is taking place inside us for all times and all places. But to answer your question, too, about how large, you know, whether the Ramayana had, you know, covered the earth at that time, well, actually, there is some evidence of that. For instance, the word Rama is found in many cities, names of many cities. Even Rome is Ram. And the Greek, the Egyptian god Ramses is Ram. And so, and it's found, there are many, many cities in Russia where, you know, that have names of the Ramayan, characters of the Ramayan as the names of their cities. So, you know, surely this Vedic culture did spread far and wide and is the basis for all culture on earth.
Right, yeah. In the Ramayana, really, it is about the Sanatana Dharma, the eternal way of life. the eternal way of living life with, you know, in accord with the natural laws. So it is not about, you know, just practicing something or preaching something. It is the eternal life of Rama, Sita and the great characters who were there. And it just flowed and flowed like the rivers, and you know, and they were all flowing with towards the ocean, and they were all, you know, just like the ocean themselves. Such great characters, and you know, such great ideals, that you know, you cannot really find them again and again in the literature.
Uh-huh. So, Linda, maybe you can tell us a bit about what the story is about and why it has been around for so many years and why is it so revered?
So the story of the Ramayana, we could just, and we do want to say, even though this, the Ramayana is much more than a story, the story is really, really gripping and really is a wonderful story. It's the most widely read epic in history. It's a epic poem, actually, and the first poem, and nearly a billion people in India, plus millions in Thailand, Nepal, and Bali, consider it to be their spiritual guide today. It's the story of the enlightened prince Rama, who is beloved by all in the kingdom, yet is unjustly banished to the forest for 14 years. His faithful wife Sita and his devoted brother Lakshman follow him, and the three encounter friends and foes, from forest sages to horrific demons to flying monkeys and wise bears. And also the forest sages are especially interesting, I think, to everyone in our community. When his innocent wife Sita is captured by the demon king Ravana, the hero Rama ends up not only rescuing her, but liberating the earth from darkness. And as Ramayana scholar Michael Sternfield notes in the introduction to our book, the Ramayana has been described as the original epic quest, comparable to the Bible, Star Wars, and Romeo and Juliet all rolled into one. And, of course, here we're talking about the more, you know, the more surface level of the Ramayana, the story level. And also, though, the great spiritual wisdom. The Ramayana just has so many levels to it. It has this surface level of the story where anyone can enter in, children can listen to it, and I'm sure Kumana will want to talk about that, her own experience as a child in India, listening to the Ramayana. But it has that level of the story where anyone can enter into it. And as you're reading, it's so gripping. It's such a wonderful tale. It has so many amazing elements and so many beautiful, enlightened characters who inspire us and yet are facing such dilemmas that we want to turn the page. And we're going along enjoying so much that we don't even realize that we're learning these deep spiritual lessons. And about dharma, about forgiveness, about tolerance, about compassion, about how to act justly and rightly in every situation with every kind of person that we meet. And I think really that is the key why the Ramayana is relevant today, because it speaks to our own lives. It speaks to the kind of dilemmas and the kind of things that we encounter in our own lives. We have all experienced loss of a loved one. We have all experienced separation from a loved one. We have all experienced some kind of material loss as well. And we've all experienced meeting someone who thinks they are our enemy, but yet, you know, and how we deal with that, the Ramayana shows us how to turn that enemy into a friend. And so I think that, you know, there are all these lessons and all these beautiful stories that speak to us today. And Kumada, I think you'll definitely want to talk about this, answer this question too.
So what is wrong in having a sweet speech? What is wrong in having harmony? What is wrong in having friendliness, deep friendships? And, you know, these are some of the values, you know, that Ramayana again and again brings. And then just showing, you know, how morality and immorality, where the thin lines are. And again and again, Ramayana, as we were growing up, we read them, we heard them when we were two years old, just told like a simple story. and then we would read it again, you know, in a different way. And I read first when I was just barely 9 years old. My father gave me Rajagopalachari's book, Ramayana, as a present to me. And I read it. I don't know, you know, maybe I took a few months or what. I don't remember exactly. But, you know, so at every level, at every stage of consciousness, at every age, one gains from Ramayana. And one continues to gain Ramayana. So it is not, you know, it may be a simple story, it may be a simple story of teaching you something, some values. But then later on the spiritual values come, the higher states of consciousness evolve. And, you know, the perfection in life is seen. And, you know, how you can gain immortality. All this is all laid out. And it is, you know, it's because it is Ramayana. It is the story of Rama, the perfected man. And the story of the eternal transcendental being. Thank you. Thank you so much, Stan.
Yes, very good. That's a wonderful answer. And now, let's talk a little bit about who composed the Ramayana. And I think Valmiki was the one you chose, but there were some other ones you could have chosen from. Maybe, Linda, you can tell us a little bit why you chose Valmiki's rendition.
Well, the Ramayana, as we know, is part of the Vedic tradition of India and of the Vedic texts, the Sanskrit text, and it's considered the first poem. Valmiki was a great seer of that Vedic tradition. He didn't really write the Ramayana. He saw the scenes unfolding on the screen of his own awareness. So in other words, he cognized it. Then he composed the 24,000 verses in perfect meter. For this feat, he is called the Adi Kavi, or the first poet of India. And while there are hundreds of versions of the Ramayana in many different languages, they are all based on this original Valmiki text. Some versions are retellings. You know, there are translations, and maybe I should just stop here to explain the difference between a translation and the retelling that we did. A translation takes the original Valmiki Sanskrit text and translates it into English or another language word for word. A translation in English is huge. It's like three volumes big, three huge volumes. So that can be somewhat daunting to someone who's trying to, you know, encounter this text for the first time, especially if, unlike Kumara, they didn't have, you know, these stories being told to them as young people, as a young person. So, you know, it's all new. For instance, I read the Ramayana first when I was, 25. And you know, we need maybe an easier entry into it. And I'll let Kumara speak about her inspiration, because she is the one who had the inspiration to begin, you know, to do this retelling. And it's a retelling, what we did. It's that means that we shortened the original so that it could be easier to read in one volume. And we wanted it to be in easy-to-read English, and to use the, to stick to the main story. We didn't go so much into the side stories because there just wasn't room for all that. I do want to say that some versions, some retellings, add scenes or elaborate on the story in some way, or try to make it so modern that it's really a different story, their own kind of vision. But we didn't do that. We stuck to the original story.
We carried the essence.
Yes, although we shortened it to make it fit into the one volume.
Yes.
We wanted to, our main idea was to honor the tradition of the Ramayana in its purest form, with all of its wisdom and spiritual depth and transcendent qualities, but just make it easy to read. And I know Kumara has a lot more to say about this, because Kumara is the one who I owe everything to, because she had the inspiration to do this. And so, Kumara, do you want to talk about that?
What I was trying to say, Linda, is, you know, in reality, so many people wrote on Ramayana, and it was the inspiration that it was like a river. They could not put a dam to it, you know, it had to flow. And these were really very great saintly people, great poets, great writers in different languages, and they were so overjoyed, the bliss overflowing. And they had to write. They saw so many Ramayanas came. And here, you know, depending on they tried to change a little bit here and there because they thought, you know, this would be more touching to the heart or this will be more understanding than Valmiki. But there are so many true Valmiki versions too, not only just true translations, but also rendering, just like, you know, how we have done, just rendering the Valmiki Ramayana, making it easier and not deviating from it. So all of them are there, but I think, you know, for the Western people and also for today's youth in India, our Ramayana would be very easy to read, easy to comprehend, and really get the essence of it, just like, you know, a bee taking in the honey from the flower, they will be easily able to extract the essence without, you know, mulling and without thinking and all that. So this is where our book will really have its value.
Very good. Tell us how the Ramayana has influenced your personal life.
Kumuda, I think you should start.
Okay, all right, yeah. Well, you know, we begin to listen to Ramayana when we are very young. And, you know, it gives us an inspiration that, you know, Rama is such a nice person. And he's such a leader, such a great king. And then we hear about Sita, and these were the qualities that our grandparents used to say, you know, you must be, as a girl growing up, you know, you must be like Sita, and you must be like Urmila, and, you know, all those people, the very refined women, and so many characters, you know, that really sparkle in your heart and really influence your mind and thinking and behavior. And then Ramayana is also enacted. It was, you know, it used to be there in drama form all the time in stages. Then Ramayana was there as movies they were being made, and then, you know, very later on after I came to US, then they were making the TV serials. Because, you know, we never even had really TVs, you know, when I left in 1974 at that time. So my, you know, the reading Ramayana, listening to Ramayana was one thing, and then, you know, grandparents or parents, you know, telling you and saying, you know, listen, you know, you be harmonious like the way brothers and sisters are in Ramayana, and be a nice girl like, you know, Sita, like that. It was all influencing. And when I was growing up, maybe I don't even remember, you know, maybe I was 9 or 10 years old or maybe 8 years old, I can't remember. And I was asking my grandmother, you know, I would say, what kind of a husband should I marry? And then she would say, well, you should think of marrying somebody as good, as noble as Rama. And that really stuck in my mind, you know, and I would always think, yes, it should be somebody like that, a good person, an ethical person, and a great person. So that was the inspiration Ramayana gave, you know, at every level. And, you know, when we would have conflicts or, you know, anything, misunderstandings, then the Ramayana would stand before us and just say, the conflict resolution, how it should be, and, you know, how one should be forgiving and how one should be compassionate. So it was not one thing really. It just became an example, not by this thing, but by life, living that life, and it was, you know, so influencing,
Ramayana. That's so beautiful, Kumuda. And I have to say, having met your husband, Janardhan, and gotten to know him, I think you did choose someone who is very much a very exalted and enlightened person, and like Rama, very noble.
Thank you.
Well, for me, I first heard about the Ramayana from my husband, Tom, who is a Sanskrit scholar here at MUM and professor. And this was before we were married in the late 1970s, and he was telling me always about these beautiful stories about Rama and Sita in the forest, and how Rama would make these garlands for Sita, and they were so happy there. And it was just sounded like such a beautiful love story. And so, of course, I was attracted to read it for myself. And then once I read it, I found, of course, that it had much more depth and meaning than just the love story, but that was how I entered into it, and that was what got me started. And over the years, I've read it many times, and then my experience, I think, of transcending daily with the Transcendental Meditation Technique, both Kumita and I are long-term practitioners of TM. And for me, I think that also provided an entry into the Vedic literature, because it helped me to understand it at a very deep level. And for me, when I first started reading the Ramayana and I read these stories of these enlightened sages and saints in the forest who were guiding Rama and Sita on their way, that and yogis, great yogis, that was just such an amazing thing to me to read about, you know, this tradition of yoga and of yoga meaning union in the highest sense, meaning transcendence, meaning people who meditate and experience transcendence in a very deep way as we do with our TM practice and who reach unity consciousness. When I read about this in these ancient texts, I just was so moved and so inspired. And so for me, when Kumita asked me to, co-write this book with her, she had the inspiration first, and she was able to meet Marshi and talk to Marshi about it. And he was the one who said to use the Valmiki as our basis. And then Kumita asked me to join from there. So I am forever indebted to Kumita for this amazing opportunity, because in working with the text and writing this retelling, I have really, I feel, been transformed. And, it's been going on for, it's been going on for 18 years. And so it's really inspired my own journey of transformation and growth. Because really, as Kumita said earlier, we are all Rama and Sita in a sense. We are all on our own journey to enlightenment. And this story of Rama, Sita, and other enlightened heroes gently leads us to understand these principles of natural law. And the story unfolds in layers of meaning and feeling, revealing hidden values that transform us and speed us on our own path of self-realization. So reading the text alone is an amazing evolutionary endeavor, and working with it all these years has really been an amazing evolutionary experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It has to personally transform. It has to personally transform because the tenderness, and then the gentleness. And the sweetness that you would see in all these characters, and only very highly evolved souls can present that, being like that all the time. And so this tells us, yes, there are these higher states of consciousness, and these are the most highly evolved souls, and whether they were monkeys, whether they were bears, whether they were, common people, very ordinary people, they have this evolved consciousness. And of course you would see the lower consciousness too, and the play of the envy and the hatred and the jealousies and the pride and the egos, the play of all those things and the lust and all those things, that you would see clearly. But the hallmark of it is, really the low consciousness people are seen everywhere and known everywhere. But the higher consciousness people, how Rama and Sita and Hanuman and all that Jambavat and everyone, Vibhishan, how, they lived their lives really, really on that heights, on that evolutionary heights. And in those higher states of perfected, unity consciousness and God consciousness. And one reads this, then you understand the whole depth of the evolution, the seven states of the consciousness, and the perfection in life and the immortality that can be achieved in one life.
Wonderful. Now, this Ramayana is one of the great books of the world, and there have been others. Maybe Linda or Muda, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the hero's journey and quest themes of the great epics such as Odyssey. And it falls in one of those categories, Linda?
Well, yes. We could say that the Ramayana is an epic quest or a hero's journey. As in literature classes, they would classify it in a similar way as the Odyssey or the Iliad, which is from the Greek tradition. But, you know, there are many differences here. One, you know, being that, as Kumada explained so beautifully earlier, the Ramayana is not really just a book. It's eternally taking place in our own consciousness and even in our own physiology, as Dr. Tony Nader or Roger Ram, as Maharishi called him, named him, who has written the book Ramayana in Human Physiology. He has so beautifully pointed out that it's really, that Ram is the consciousness of Purusha value and Sita is the Prakriti, all of creation value, and that the two being unified creates Brahm, and that's why Maharishi would say Ram is Brahm. And that's what Kumada was saying, that when reading it and having the experience, we are, you know, experiencing those qualities of Brahman or of unity consciousness. So there's that huge difference. But if we're just going to look at the story value, the Ramayana on its own has proven to be the most enduring epic through the long passage of time. It's the only epic that is not really just a dusty old tome. It's the only epic that's not just studied in some kind of literature class of ancient literature. It's you know, a living spiritual guide to a million people in India and now in other places, as we said earlier, Thailand and Nepal and Sri Lanka, etc. But it's also spreading now to the West, where people are starting to discover it. And the Ramayana, which means literally the Ayana or goings of Ram, does have elements of the hero's journey or quest. And as we've said, it's also a great love story, an intense struggle between forces of good and evil. But it's just different from the Odyssey or the Iliad or other epics such as Gilgamesh, because Rama is not a flawed being at the start. And in the hero's quest, there's always, of course, some kind of a tragic flaw that the hero has to go on this quest to try to remedy. Rama is an enlightened being, and his behavior is exemplary in every instance. And I have a section of the prologue that I'd like to read, which tells some of these beautiful qualities of Ram. Rama has controlled his mind, radiant, powerful, and resolute, wise, eloquent, and glorious, he can easily destroy his enemies. With broad shoulders, a neck like a conch, and a prominent chin, he has long arms reaching to his knees. His head is noble, his limbs well proportioned, his complexion like the blue lotus. Of medium stature, his eyes large and his chest broad, filled with splendor, with auspicious markings adorning his body. The personification of integrity, he helps those who seek him out. Ever mindful of the good in others, he is generous and keeps his word. Pure and devoted to truth, he is adept at attaining samadhi, transcendental bliss. With a pleasing disposition, Rama inspires virtue in others. With a perfect memory, he knows the essential nature of the Veda. As rivers flow to the ocean, so the virtuous are devoted to Rama. Ram is delightful to gaze upon like the full moon, mighty like the ocean, firmly established in silence like the Himalaya. Like the earth, he is patient and devoted to the welfare of all.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Beautiful, very beautiful. You know, how can you describe the infinite? How can you describe the infinity? Infinite. It's not possible. We only can say partial things.
and that's really true, Kumuda. True, Kumuda. And the Ramayana, though, that is one of the key points about the Ramayana that you just brought out, Kumuda, so beautifully, is that we have this this ocean of unity consciousness, and how do you make it concrete? We have this abstract principles of Dharma. How do you make them concrete? What the Ramayana does is it makes those abstract qualities, those abstract principles and concepts, those abstract experiences understandable to us, because it gives us example after example after example of how those qualities are played out in human form and in human life. And so that is such a beautiful thing that you just said, you know, that how do you describe absolutely, and as you said, we can only, you know, the story can only show a partial value, but still it's
then,
very useful.
And then we discover the whole value of it as we transcend. It unfolds. So, you know, it keeps unfolding. So that's why Ramayana is infinite and Ramayana is immortal. Because, you know, it goes beyond time and space. And, you know, and it is infinite because it keeps expanding and expanding in your awareness. Every one of these characters will expand. And one thing I thought, Linda, would be interesting is, for the listeners, is how Ramayana is really heard in India, you know. So Ramayana, when they're reading, I think it will give just an idea, you know, how they can get the most of Ramayana. Here they usually read Ramayana for 1 week. In 1 week they should finish the text, and or at the most, you know, 10 days. And before they start the Ramayana recital, usually there will be a congregation of the pandits, you know, who will be singing the Ramayana, because Ramayana is written in slokas to sing. And you know, they would usually have the drums and the cymbals and the flute and all those things, and then there will be one person who will be coordinating this, and there will be at least 15, 20, 30 people, you know, who will be all singing the slokas. And so all the people who come, they will come and sit and listen to these verses. And there is a preparation. During this time, they are supposed to be, you know, clean. Clean means, you know, they bathe every day. And they should keep the mind clean. It is always said, you know, that you don't get angry and you don't be in envy, or you don't be arguing, or you just try to have a good, be on good behavior. Eat a very sattvic diet and meditate, and then come here, you sit in the puja and you listen, and day after day after day after day you're absorbed, and in 7 days or 9 days, whatever that period, you know, they have decided, they will finish reading the whole Ramayana. And being, you know, focused and staying sattvic and having a good daily routine and having a good behavior and, you know, meditating and all that, in that 1 week or 9 days, the greatest transformation comes. The greatest transformation, it seems to be so instantaneous. It seems to be, you know, it's just like an infusion of this transformation.
And Kumuda, are they listening to it in English or in Sanskrit?
They're listening in their regional languages.
In their own language. And so not
in their own language. So in Hindi, even they do it in Uttar Rishikesh, then they're all, you know, reading it in, actually they're reading the Sanskrit verses, but, you know, they will also be somebody explaining them in Hindi.
So they really listen to it in Sanskrit and in their regional language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Wow. That would be just so amazing.
It's a great tradition.
It is amazing. And, you know, they would read also the Bhagavatam like that.
Kumuda, I know you and Linda have co-authored a number of books together. And how does this relate to Ayurveda? Can you tell us?
The Ramayana. How does the Ramayana...
Ramayana, yeah. Because, you see, Ramayana is Veda. I mean, Ayurveda is Veda. Ayurveda is from the Veda. So it is eternal, it's immortal. And so the principles of the Ayurveda are there everywhere in Ramayana. like, you know, in the daily routine of Rama and Sita, in the meditation and yoga, and in the behavior, and, you know, and in using the herbs and the rasayanas, and in the various rejuvenation procedures that are mentioned, you know, here and there. And so it is, you know, it is, so it is all laced in. It is all laced in. It is, you know, it won't be there here and there. It is there with the food and every aspect of Ayurveda will come in there.
Right, because Ayurveda is an integral part of Vedic life, and the Ramayana.
Vedic life, yeah.
And the Ramayana.
So, you know, nobody is thinking in the morning and thinking, you know, what should I eat? What should I do? Is this or that? So it is very naturally, the rishis made it so easy. The rishis made it so easy. And, you know, they said, you know, yes, these grains are good, these vegetables are good, these fruits are good, this daily routine is so, like this. So, and they established it for at all levels, from the level of the king to the poor man, to the worker. And the kings had to follow it. So the kings had their daily routine. They had to get up in the morning and, you know, do their meditation and, you know, do their yoga and have the abhyanga and go through the daily routine. And then usually the guru has always been the enlightened one. Like, you know, Vasishtha was the guru for Rama. And Vasishtha would be counseling how the behavior should be, how his education should be, how he should be ruling, how he should be counseling. And, you know, so they would always be asking him because he is the wise one. And he is beyond these gunas and he's beyond these relative values. And so he would just see this dharma in its totality. And so there was no way, you know, that they would allow these kings, of course Rama was exceptional, but you know, in general, most of the kings, you know, they would see that they are abiding by these laws and they are staying with the Ayurveda principles.
That's beautiful. And I just want to add that there was another connection to our books. Kumuda, you know, had the vision to write all of these Ayurvedic books about many different aspects of Ayurveda for her patients, because she's a Ayurvedic practitioner and also an MD. And she had a practice in upstate New York, and also taught at State University of New York Medical School. So anyway, she had this vision and she invited me to co-author a few of these books, but Kumuda wrote many more books, with other co-authors as well. The books that Kumuda and I did together were Conquering Chronic Disease, also For a Blissful Baby, which is Ayurveda for Childbirth and Pregnancy, and then Super Healthy Kids was our last book together, and that was a parent's guide to Maharishi Ayurveda and published by MUM Press. And in that book, on healthy parenting, we mentioned how important it is to provide children with strong role models. And the Ramayana does just that, as Kumuda has told us earlier in this interview. In India, children aspire to become a Sita or a Rama or a Lakshman. They act out the characters in dramatic plays at school and on the playground. And we know from that the Ramayana teaches us how to embrace people of different races, levels of education, and economic backgrounds as our own family. It exemplifies the Vedic expression, "The world is my family." And so you know, we're really giving them this example, these beautiful role models and these enlightened characters of Rama and Sita and the other high-minded souls in the book. I mean, in the epic. And also, I would say too that you know, the Ramayana also, it gives us a vision of ideal behavior and higher states of consciousness. And then our other books, the Ayurvedic books, tell us in detail how to cultivate that in ourselves and in our families.
Good, maybe.
You know, and it's really very interesting if you just see how, you know, how important it is to eat sattvic food to have a sattvic mind, to have a properly balanced mind, intelligent mind, creative mind, clear mind, you know. So it is important to eat sattvic food. And then we see the sattvic food being eaten by Hanuman, by Jambavant, who is a bear, and you know, and all the other noble animals characters, you know, we call them the Vanaras. And so the, it's very well understood that, you know, even somebody who is not so evolved in terms of this thing, by eating sattvic food, you become sattvic. And this is what really we need to understand in the world today, is how to raise the sattva, how to raise the sattva, this purity in the mind and in our nervous system, and bring this natural evolution. So the Ayurveda, the Ramayana, all these things are adding to this sattva.
Yes, that's really beautiful. And actually, we just can also remind everyone, we all know this, but the basis for living a sattvic life is to experience that state of sattva through our daily meditation practice, through the transcendental meditation technique, which brings balance to the mind, the body, the emotions, and the environment, and allows us to establish ourselves in a state of, you know, yoga stakru karmani, in a state of pure consciousness or pure being, and so that we spontaneously begin to choose the right foods, the sattvic behaviors, the sattvic friends, and sattva just means balance or wholeness. And so it helps in the positive things in life. It's spontaneously, we don't even have to think about it. Spontaneously, we are attracted more and more and more to those positive things that nurture and help us to develop and help everyone around us as well.
And I think reading this new book that you both have written, what we're talking about now, is going to certainly bring something influence to the mind. I hope all of our audience listening to this program will pick it up and listen to it. Maybe, Linda, can you tell us a little bit about, you mentioned some of the books that you both have written. Are they available here in Fairfield?
Yes. So that's a really great question. So the books are all available online, for one thing, if you'd like to buy them that way. But the Super Healthy Kids, A Parent's Guide to Marshi Ayurveda, and For a Blissful Baby, Healthy, Happy Pregnancy is available, are both available at the MUM bookstore and on campus here, and also in other places in town, such as the Revelations. The book, The Ramayana, a new retelling of Valmiki's ancient epic, complete and comprehensive, which is published by Tarcher Perigee and is an imprint of Penguin Random House, our newest book that Kumud and I have collaborated on, is available at Revelations and also at the TM Welcome Center, which is right next door to Revelations on Main Street. And it will also be available at the Monday night, November 14th, when I'll be giving a talk as part of the October Surprise Festival of Knowledge at 8 o'clock in Dalby Hall on November 14th, and we will have books for sale there.
That'll be very good, you know, in this. Christmas gifts and birthday gifts, you know, because it can reach out to so many different ages, young people, college people, college students. A great gift for young couples, older people.
For everyone.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Everybody will benefit, and every time you read it again, then you benefit more.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kumud Reddy and Linda Agnes, for this charming book and interview. And we want to remind our audience that this book is available. Linda just mentioned where it could be gotten. But also her new talk coming up is October, what is it?
November. November 14th, Monday night, in Dalby Hall at 8 o'clock. And actually the title of the talk is Dharmic Dilemmas of the Ramayana and What We Can Learn from Them.
Very good.
It's very good, yeah. Because, you know, it's not something you can just read and, you know, just read or listen and then forget about it. Because Ramayana will lead you, will definitely enhance the transcendence. And, you know, and I think that is the greatest value.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Well,
and not only that, you know, just listening to it, you completely transcend.
That's right. And actually, there's Marcy has spoken about this, that in reading literature, great literature, such as the Ramayana, the Vedic literature, Sanskrit literature, that we experience these great swings in our awareness from the point value to the infinite, from the relative to the absolute, from swings in feeling and meaning. And these great swings shake us and actually purify us. And then as we, and that causes us to transcend. And so it's an actual physiological experience that happens when we read this kind of Sanskrit literature, this great literature, these epics such as the Ramayana and the Mahabharata and other epics of India, or rather other texts of India. And we read these and we experience it. And even actually it's true about other literature as well. Dr. Rhoda Orme-Johnson at MUM did some research on this and found some evidence in the brainwave coherence of these swings. And so this kind of transcendence comes through reading uplifting and great literature. But of course we know that, the fastest way is transcending through our TM technique. But this is something wonderful to do that also uplifts and changes our physiology as we read.
Wonderful.
Yeah. As you read and then when you're listening, it is very powerful because you transcend so much by the time the book is finished.
Yes, I imagine the transcendence is greater when you're listening because you wouldn't have to...
When you're listening, and this is a very powerful book when you're listening. You know, it's just taking you in.
Well, this has been very wonderful, Kumuda. Unfortunately, we're coming close to the end of our hour.
It's getting to be 11 o'clock here.
But it's been just a wonderful time talking with you and Linda, and we certainly want to encourage our listeners on KHOE to pick up the Ramayana book and indulge in it because it's just a wonderful experience in itself. So thank you, Dr. Kumuda Reddy and Linda Agnes, for this charming book and the interview, and thank you, our listening audience, for listening to World Radio KHOE. And the program What's New on Campus. Until next time, we'll say Jai Gurudev.
Thank you, Stan.
Thank you, Stan.
Jai Gurudev.
Jai Gurudev.
Thank you, Linda.